Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hi there. Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It's Erin and I'm here with Ashley. Hello, Ashley.
Hi, Erin. Hi, everyone.
And Hayley.
Hello.
Nice to see you again, Hayley.
And you.
And Sue Elvis is joining us again this week because last week we began our conversation about unschooling, a voyage of discovery, and we had lots more to talk about. So we're continuing today in a part two. So Sue, thank you for joining us again.
Oh, hi, everybody. I am so excited to be a guest again. I was afraid you would ask somebody else to step into the guest bell this week and I wouldn't get to finish this conversation. It's such a brilliant conversation. So yes, we're going to have a wonderful time today, aren't we?
Yes. And I'm looking at the post, because for anybody who didn't hear part one, we were kind of going section by section through Hayley's post, Unschooling, a Voyage of Discovery. And we still have quite a long way to go in the post. So let's see if we need a part three or how we do today in today's conversation. So I would encourage anybody who hasn't listened to the first part to maybe go back and do that, because I just think it will just kind of flow probably a little bit more easily. So the last time we spoke, we spoke a lot about our role as parents and kind of the idea of being captain on the ship and working, but yet working together with the crew. So I enjoyed that part of the conversation, just thinking about leadership and what leadership is all about. But then there's another piece to this stanza that talks about, so the section that says, and so just like their crew, the captain is curious and eager to learn. And then it says, a network of captains and crews on the sea, they can ask for directions and help on their way. So Hayley, when I first read that part, I identified so much with it, because that's really how we've all gotten to know each other, really, is, you know, sharing ideas, getting support from people. I think I've shared before, Hayley, that the reason that I came across you was actually through Sue. And so it really is true that we all kind of tap into different ideas and different, like, I think it's just fun to hear different people's experiences. But I think it's more than fun. I think it's important for people, because it can feel very uncertain. It can feel very isolating. So to be able to tap in and realize that there's, you know, to just tap into your analogy, this network of captains and crews and all these different ships out there, it's like everybody is really on their own voyage, but people are communicating with one another. They're offering other families guidance and encouragement. And I think that that's a really big part of what kind of helps us feel confident. And it helps us regain confidence times that we're feeling a bit wobbly or a little bit less sure at times. So I loved that part, because I knew it was like a feel. It was like when I read it, I knew exactly what you were. I kind of knew that feeling of that sense of camaraderie among other families.
Yeah. And I think that's the same for all parents, I think, isn't it? That you, you build up your network, but I think even more with home education, I'm sure we've talked before about that whole idea of this other world that you kind of didn't know existed. And most of us don't know that. You know, at least at the beginning, we don't know many, if any, other home educating families. So it is so important, isn't it, to find other people that you can, ask for directions and help on your way. And I know that I found that, you know, I found that incredibly important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes it's direct. It's direct conversation, but other times it's just reading the things that other people have written, or, you know, listening to a podcast, or reading a book that somebody's written. It's like, it can be directly with those other people, but sometimes it's just knowing that there are other people out there that have some of the same thoughts that you have. And I mean, I think I experienced that from the time my oldest was a baby, actually, because Haley, really it's parenting in general. But I think when you kind of move in a direction that maybe is a little bit different than what you've known before, and you even just find a book. For me, like even when my son was born, even just finding that first book or two and thinking, oh, okay, I've kind of had these thoughts. I've kind of felt like this is a direction I'd like to go in, but I didn't really know what to call it, or I didn't know anybody else was doing this. And then you just get your hands on a book that resonates, and it can make all the difference, can't it?
And I think it was Sue's blog, wasn't it? It was the fact that both of us read and commented on Sue's blog in the first place that actually connected us to.
So
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can relate to everything that was just said. And for me, on top of the blog posts and absolutely listening to a lot of podcasts and finding books and some in particular that were really helpful, I've had a lot of experience within Instagram and finding, like, that's when I had Instagram before we were home educating, but really used it a lot more as a tool, I guess, to connect with other home educating parents. And it was just such a convenient way to, you know, visually see different things that they were sharing, or listen if they were sharing in stories or reels, or reading their posts. But it was neat because that's when, like, I could start seeing virtually anyway, a network. And I was like, oh, this person's connected to this person, and this person's connected to this person. And then it can, from my experience, start to feel like a little bit of a community, or pockets of communities even. And that's just been so helpful in everything you guys have already said. But it's just, there's other people doing this. Like, I remember when I first started feeling that way, like, I knew there were other people homeschooling, but specifically when it was around unschooling, I was like, oh, and it's exciting and it's inspiring and it's reassuring. And it's helpful, but, I mean, there's other ones definitely, but Instagram has been like consistent for me to find a network and connect with people and stay in connection with other people. So that's been a good network from my experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just, I think too, I've been surprised at how real the connections are with, you know, I feel like this is a whole other topic maybe about online or virtual, relationships, but, and I, you know, I got a little bit of a sense of that when my kids started online gaming, but I didn't really value it, I don't think, at the time, because I hadn't experienced it myself. I didn't really understand how real those connections were. But that's the other thing, I think, is that not only are we feeling supported by people, but we're wanting to support other people. Like, I find, you know, I'll see something and I will know enough about somebody's family to think, oh, I know whose kid would really enjoy this. Or, like, it's just a really, the whole thing's kind of fascinating when you think about this whole sort of online global network that's available now. So it's very reciprocal, I think. Most people that I know, yes, they love the support, but they also love to share their experiences and ideas. And I think I think many people would say that it goes beyond just this kind of virtual person. They actually feel connected and supported and supporting.
Yeah. I was just going to add that too, Erin, what you just said, that it does go beyond just watching what other people are sharing, or maybe sharing a bit on your own. And from my experience, we connected, I think, first on Instagram, I'm pretty sure yourself, Erin, and me. And now we're doing this and we're in the community together. And I can just think of lots of different examples where that's happened, where it goes beyond, and more things come out of it. And I think like it just does go to show how from, again, I know everyone has different experiences, but from my experience, like the, all the different homeschool, unschool networks have been so welcoming and so helpful and really supportive. So that's a, that's another piece to it as well. It's not just like, but I see what you're saying. Like, it's once you experience it, it just, it makes more sense. So.
Well, and just, sorry. So I have, not to keep talking, but say one more thing here. I think too, sometimes just back to the book idea, I think if you can find, you know, a book or two or three that really are sort of your anchoring books, I think that's another thing that can be helpful. Like, Sue, I've heard a lot of people say that about your books, that it's reassuring to go back and read a particular chapter or, yeah. And I've heard, you know, people will talk about that with Peter Gray and just understanding the learning process. I guess everybody's got their, you know, their particular book or maybe a book for a particular season, but just even if you don't know the person who wrote the words or you don't know the podcaster, just knowing that that information is out there in the moment that, you know, that you might need it and that you can seek it out, I think is really valuable.
I think that that different people relate to different bloggers, podcasters, Instagram people, that it's lovely we have a variety of people sharing unschooling because we don't connect closely with all of them, but we will find somebody who we feel that we like to follow. But when my kids were growing up, we had homeschooling friends, but we didn't know any unschoolers. And I found that we just went our own way. And I would have liked, for my kids' sake, to have tapped into a network physically of other kids that were learning in the same way they were. So when we went to homeschool gatherings, the other kids would say things like, what grade are you in? Which is your favorite subject? That sort of thing. When are you finishing for the year? When do your holidays begin? And my kids never knew what to say. You know, I don't know what grade I'm in, all that sort of thing. But I feel the internet has been a great gift. I've used it a lot for connecting in with people like you, Haley, and Erin, other people who are sharing unschooling. And that's where I found it has been the most influential for me, is we're all trying to help, as you said. We want to help, turn around and help other people. And the internet is giving us that opportunity to share what we've learned and to support other people. And recently, the last few years, Erin, I have really appreciated having your friendship in particular to talk about adult children and older, because you can't know. If there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff on your blog, you can't share because it's private. But of course, being a mother, you sometimes want to talk over a few situations with somebody who understands. And I think there's this idea out there that, oh, choose the right method of homeschooling, choose unschooling, and your life will be perfect and your kids will be perfect. And just wave them off into the sunset and that's it. And you don't need these connections anymore. You've done your job. You've moved on. And I find that those connections with other people are invaluable. I rely on having conversations with you, Erin, and other people online. Not so much to, I don't want to invade their privacy. It's still nice to talk with people who are at the same stage of parenting as I am. And yeah, those connections. I'm glad there's other people out there surfing in their boats, bobbing along on the seas of the internet. And when people say that there's dangers with the internet, look, and we shouldn't be on the online, oh, I just think of all the positive things that I am grateful for the internet. It has allowed me to make so many connections and do so many things with the talents that I have and help people. So I'm grateful for that.
And so I think that's such an interesting thought about as our kids get older, because I might have mentioned this last time that I had, you know, a thought that, how can I explain this? It's difficult to make a choice that's outside of the box. So a part of me was just thinking, well, you know, we're doing this, and there will be a point when my kids are whatever age that, you know, that'll be finished. And to a degree, it kind of is. Like, to a certain degree, it's really nice to just be able to connect with people without always needing to talk about what grade your kids are in, or kind of schoolish type things. And so that piece is true, but I think there's another bit too, that living this way changes the way we think about things. And so it changes a lot of our, I think for me anyway, it's changed my outlook on a lot of different things, on thoughts about my kids, but just thoughts on lots of people and different opportunities and just different ways of seeing the world. So sometimes it is really nice, even if your kids are older, to be able to talk to somebody, even though you're not, even if you're not in the trenches of kind of, you know, just the different decisions we make when kids are little or maybe entering high school, that sort of thing. You're speaking with somebody who, you know, has come along through the same path and holds a lot of the same kind of ways of looking at things. And I just think maybe it's a more curious mindset. Maybe it's a little bit of a more open mindset, but there's just something to that as well. Not just about the kids, but just about the view of life. The next line here is, the captain and crew are loyal and close, being together forever, and yet it all seems brand new. And I'm just going to read down a little bit here. With freedom to choose and support from their captain, the ship's a safe space for all of the crew. In tune with each other and checking in lots, their rights to decide, their judgment respected. Kindness and calm are a feature of life. Okay. Haley, I love all that. So the piece here about been together forever and yet all seems brand new. And I think that's just the really cool thing, is that we can become really familiar with one another. We get to know each other really well. And yet, because we're not always on a prescribed path, and there is, as you mentioned, lots of freedom to choose, life can be brand new, and it can, you know, it does feel like there's lots of novelty, and things aren't getting old. So that's kind of the main piece that stuck out to me, is it feels like a bit of a paradox. You know, you're spending a lot of time with the same people, and yet at the same time, there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of, I don't know if newness is the right word I'm looking for, but it really is kind of a paradox, isn't it? Because we do spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Erin, definitely. And I think I was thinking of all that. But also what strikes me now reading it is I was kind of thinking as well about the fact that when you're continually, I mean, we're all learning all the time anyway, but when we're so clued into the fact that we're all learning all the time, I feel like we begin to recognize that what's valued about knowledge kind of changes over time, doesn't it? It's like language evolves over time. And funnily enough, we were having a bit of a discussion here the other day about what is common sense and what is general knowledge. And we quite like quiz shows here, and we watch a few of them, and some of them, you know, sometimes it can be really frustrating because there can be loads of questions and you think, well, I can't answer any of those. And you think, well, is this general knowledge, or you know, should I be expected to know this, or is it just the fact that, you know, it's kind of, when we think about all the possible things that we could learn in life, there are so many, and we can't possibly be all privy to the same information, can we? I was thinking about that as well, about the fact that because there are certain bits of knowledge, I guess, that are more valuable in certain circles and at certain times than other bits of knowledge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That we makes like sense.
No, it does. And I think we also like quiz shows. And it is interesting sometimes how you'll see a contestant, and they're, of course, they're under time pressure too. But sometimes you can tell they have no idea. And it does seem like it would be common knowledge, or it seems, you know, to the host, like it would be common knowledge. But it just shows you how it varies, depending on where you live, what's important in your life, what type of life you have. But that would be an interesting conversation to have, common knowledge versus, no, sorry, common sense versus
general knowledge.
Knowledge, yeah, that would be.
Because I feel like people can be very scathing sometimes about the whole thing of, oh, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. And you kind of think, well, does everybody know that? And on, you can be having a conversation with somebody and at one point they say something that they've, I don't know, my children are often saying to me, oh, I've just learned this. And sometimes I'll think, oh, that's strange. I would have thought you already knew that. And then a few sentences down the line, they'll say something massively profound that is new to me. And I think, you know, it's kind of that would be silly to judge somebody by the one thing they said that, oh, their knowledge is lacking somehow. And then in the next sentence, they tell you something that you didn't know. So it's, yeah.
Very true. No, very, very true. And I wonder if that, well, maybe I'm saying it a little bit differently, Haley, but so you're right. We all have these various pieces of knowledge. And at the same time, I'm wondering if this idea that we can spend so much time with the same people, but still find newness in it or curiosity in it is sometimes because we do share a common context. As much as we're individuals, we do share a common context as a family. And so I find that you kind of build, I mean, just to even use I'm trying to think what the word is, a series, I guess, like if you're watching something like these great baking shows or something like that, and you look forward to sitting down as a family and seeing the next episode and you learn from that and you're talking about that. And we've had several times where it might be a couple of us watching something or three of us watching something, and then that person can't make it or they're at work or whatever. This happened the other night with my husband. We'd been watching something and we'd watched it for several weeks and he was away. And I almost felt like, I mean, I did watch it, but I felt like I couldn't almost because it felt like we had the shared context with it. And so you do kind of build this kind of collective energy with things that, I don't know, it's almost like the more time you spend together, the more you want to, or the more can, even if you're not directly spending time together, the more you want to share with the other people about something you did with the, you know, the time that would be something you would both understand. And Sue, I know you've talked in the past, I can't remember what it was, a cooking show or a baking show that your family might have been during the pandemic kind of got into. And I find with those shows, there's like a building of, you know, each week you find out something new, right? Somebody gets eliminated or somebody wins something. And it's harder to do that out of that context of everybody watching together, isn't it?
Yeah, that was MasterChef Australia. We had a fantastic time every evening during the lockdowns, gathering together as a family to watch that. And yeah, but what I was thinking about, if brand new, is that we never know what experiences are ahead of us, that we as a family found ourselves. Yeah, we spent lots of time together, but one day I decided that I would blog. So we all got into blogging. One day somebody suggested we write novels for NaNoWriMo. We all got into NaNoWriMo and we wrote novels for ages. We saw that The Hollow Crown was released with Shakespeare. So we had a Shakespeare period. Then Imogen decided, well, what if I made some music videos? Could I do that? And we investigated and we thought, well, give it a go. And I found that there's always something brand new to do with the people, well, we in our family that we did together. Obviously you've got offshoots where other people do their own things, and then they, like Sophie was into exercise for a long time and she kept trying to get people involved in that. We all ran together, but then she got into all these online workouts and squatting and everything. And nobody was really that interested in doing that, but she kept talking about it. And then one day I said, all right, I'll give it a go. And she was just so thrilled that I would give it a go. But there was always something brand new. It wasn't like, and that looking back, you think, wow, I would never have imagined we'd have a YouTube channel, or we'd go out down the park and we'd be there making music videos at sunrise, or we would write novels of 50,000 or more words, or, and they don't even have to be impressive things, but they were experiences that we had that were outside our immediate experience, that they were things that we could never have imagined doing. The idea hadn't even occurred to us, and it sort of came along naturally. And even things like sitting down and watching shows together, we took advantage of the lockdown, and that became a family passion. And now all my kids have left home except one. I feel guilty sitting watching MasterChef by myself. And when they come back for dinner and I'll say, oh, look, I was watching season blah, blah, blah. And they'll say, what, you watching without us, Mum? And you think it was a family thing, but everybody else has moved on and I'm watching it by myself. But I've got these lovely memories of doing things with my kids. But yeah, it's, I suppose, the same sort of thing when you watch Shakespeare. I watch Shakespeare by myself these days. You can see the passage of time, but there's no one else around. But Gemma Rose this morning, she went to, she goes, oh, Mum, got to go to work today. And it's all dramatic and put on, you know, that's the sort of person she is. She's not really moaning. She says, oh, Mum, I want to stay home today. She said, she hasn't been well, I suppose. And she goes, oh, Mum, if we could stay home and spend some time together. And I said, yeah, we could get coffee and we could get blankets and we could put on a musical and we could go revisit those days when we used to sit down and watch musicals for an afternoon together. And that was another thing we enjoyed doing. And she says, oh, I hope I get home early, Mum. And so if she does get home early this afternoon, we might do that. But yeah, brand new. But I'm probably diverting from that sentence there. Maybe didn't capture the same things that you were talking about.
No, it's Sue, what you just said about the the idea of people saying, oh, did you watch that without me? Mm-hmm. It reminds me of when my kids and I used to read books together before bed, and we would, you know, finish on a chapter. And then I'm a person that I don't mind giving myself a bit of a spoiler. Like I'll peek ahead. I have a hard time just putting the bookmark in and leaving it. And so that became a joke that, you know, and it was the same thing. Don't read ahead. We don't know yet. We have to, and it was the idea that like we all had to find out together. That was kind of the idea. And I used to tease them because I said, well, I'm not going to know the whole thing. I'm just going to peek a little bit. I just want to see. I think as a parent too, sometimes you're looking to see how long the next chapter is. Sometimes it's practical, right? But you know, one of my kids in particular was just like, no, we all have to find out at the same time. And I think it's like that. We had done an episode when we were talking about flow and learning. And I think during that discussion, we talked a little bit about not just individual flow, but flow as a family when we're learning and we're doing things together. And I think that's what it reminds me of, that you're kind of in this zone with a book that you're all into and you are all looking forward to the next chapter, but it kind of ruins, I guess, the group vibe if one person is looking ahead and finding out what's going on. But but no, Sue, that was good because that actually reminded me of that, which I'd forgotten about. You had said something else too that just made me think. So this part here about with freedom to choose and support from their captain, and the idea of freedom to choose, because that's a big conversation, I think, that people have, whether or not children should have freedom to choose. And you had said something about your family had been running together, and then Sophie had gotten more into some different sorts of exercises, or you mentioned squats, different things, and that at first that didn't sound that attractive to you. Like you might maybe weren't as drawn to doing that as the running, but that you, it sounds like you gave it a try, or you got involved in it. And I just think too, sometimes we can tap into those moments that we feel resistance or lack of interest to imagine how our children are feeling. It could be something that we really want to introduce our kids to, and we think it's really important. Or maybe it's something that we enjoy doing so much that we just can't imagine that they wouldn't want to be part of it, or to come outside on this particular day or whatever. And I find it helpful to have those kinds of moments to just tap back into and remind myself that, well, this, you know, I often feel resistance, or like I don't really understand why the other person wants to do this. But somehow when it's kids, there's a lot of talk about convincing them. And I mean, there's some things that even almost talk about almost tricking them, right? Oh, we get into this a lot. If you search up things like sneaky learning or stealth learning, there's a lot of that. It's like, if we can convince them to do this, they won't even realize their learning history, or they won't even, you know that they've taken in these facts. And so I think when children are talked about that way, it's really this idea that they can't be trusted to have freedom to learn things, or to have a sense of what they'd like to learn. And I think it's really easy to get caught up in that. But I guess all that to say that having those moments where we can kind of remember what it feels like to not want to be dragged along with something that somebody else wants to do or thinks is important. I think it can be really helpful to.
But also, yeah. Sorry, Erin, I was just thinking about how we feel, but can we sometimes put that feeling aside as a parent and say, well, look, I don't play video games, or I don't want to do 100 squat challenge, but I'm going to challenge myself to go outside of what I really like and just do that for my child. Because I think that we all know what it feels like when somebody is interested in what we're passionate about. If they want to come and listen to us or watch a movie we really enjoy, or you know, can I tell you about, and somebody says, yeah, tell me about it, I'm really interested. And it's so exciting when somebody wants to join us when in one of our interests. And how nice it is, I think, for our kids when we're willing to do something that's not, we're not naturally inclined to do, that we think we won't like, but to do it anyway for our kids and have that. And I actually found, I did the 100 squat challenge. I did it fine. And I felt really satisfied. But what was most enjoyable about the whole experience was Sophie's delight that her mother had valued what she was doing and was willing to give it a go. And also to learn more about what motivates our kids to like particular things. Why do our kids like this video game? And we might say, oh, look, it looks like rubbish. But how do we know until we start getting into it and playing it? And I wonder, Erin, you were saying about that resistance. I wonder if their resistance to the things that we feel like we want to share with them would be less if our resistance was less to the things that they were. If we did a reciprocal, it was just a natural atmosphere that we were willing to at least taste somebody else's interests, or to just give it a go. And yeah, I'll come and watch this with you for half an hour, Mom, see how I like it. And quite often I found they actually decided they would like to do after all. Or maybe the other thought I was having was, Erin, that, well, it's for everybody. What's your comment, Erin? What I was thinking was, sometimes if we just do what we enjoy doing, that's enough to, like, you put that movie on, they put Shakespeare play on, and people wander through, oh, what are you doing, Mum? and they sit down, and before they know it, they're sharing something that we really would have loved to have shared with them. But that sneaky learning too, why do we want to share it? Do we want to share it because we think it will fill in the gaps? Or do we want to share it because we love it so much and we want them to feel that joy and that delight that we feel? So there's two different reasons, isn't there, why we might want somebody, one of our children, to share something in particular. Is it just, I think there's nothing wrong with wanting our kids to, whether they do or not, wanting to offer them that invitation to something we really enjoy. But I don't think that's sneaky learning. I think that is sharing the joy. But obviously there are times when parents say they want their kids to come and do particular activities because it fills in the gaps or the curriculum or syllabus, whatever it is. Something that's what you were talking about earlier. Is it general knowledge? Should they have that knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, to parts of that paragraph that you've just read out, Erin, the second paragraph, the bit about their rights to decide and their judgment respected, that's like you were saying, Sue, it's totally right and proper that we have things that we want to share with our children, but and also we want them to be able to share stuff with us. But also, if we are able to respect their judgment, then we can respect their, you know, respect them if they want to say no. And then also they may well have more respect of the times that we need to say no to them then, if they, like you say, a reciprocal arrangement, and you feel like that respect and trust is two ways. And I think, that's all part of creating that safe space that I think is so important. And also I mentioned in that paragraph about checking in lots. And I know you were saying, Sue, about, wondering why is it that thing that our children really like, that perhaps at first sight we don't really understand, the more we can get information from them, not grilling them, but the more we respect the fact that they do love something, and because we respect and love them, we're genuinely interested in why they love something, then we'll learn more about it, and actually we might find ourselves beginning to love that thing as well, mightn't we? That's those shared experiences that we have. And I think also that checking in bit is, sometimes we can tell that there's something off, there's something not right, but maybe there's something not right about, maybe we can sense that our children are feeling a bit sad at the moment, or they're feeling frustrated or something, but we our idea of why that is might be completely off if we don't check in with them. So the idea of checking in lots, I think, is so important, because we can start making so many assumptions about why they're feeling a certain way, or even making assumptions about how they're feeling. And we might, we can be off in our sort of assumptions that we make. And I think those things are just so important. And I mean, my blog is called Taking a Kinder Path. So the bit about kindness and calm being a feature of life, totally, kindness and calm is not always a feature of my life. None of us can do that all the time. That is not about, it is a feature. It's not something we have to do all the time. But the more that we can kind of have that, we can look for the kindest explanation, I guess, sometimes. And we can be able to pause sometimes and not necessarily say the first assumption that we have about something, pause a little bit and let our children share a bit more with us before we rush in with our judgment. All those things help to build that safe space and those strong relationships that we all want to have with our children, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Haley, I appreciate you. The last thing you said there about kindness and calm are a feature of life. I really like that, because when I read that, I thought, because I love this paragraph, and specifically really stood out to me. And that last little bit about kindness and calm had me feeling a little like that's the thing I'm not doing well enough, right? Even though I know, I mean, I just assume you guys all have kind and calm households all the time. I'm not going to lie, even though I know that can't be the reality. So it's just, I say that because it's helpful to hear that that's what you meant, right? With the kindness and calm are a feature of life, and it's not always like that. And what I think about that too is that I think it's kind of taking it a step further. This is what I find I do and I try to practice, is when I'm not the kindest or I'm not as kind as I wish I had have been looking back, that I recognize it, and that I often will maybe point it out or just acknowledge it with the kids by saying, I know I'm not, I'll even say sometimes, I know I'm not saying this in the kindest way right now. So recognizing it and talking about that, and then apologizing and repairing at times as well. So I like that piece there. And then there was something else I wanted to say about the safe space for all. To me, that and a lot of this paragraph is like, this is why I chose to home educate and why we choose to continue to home educate, everything in this paragraph. But the safe space for all, and listening to what you guys were talking about around giving, like offering invitations, and respecting their choice to maybe say, you know, say yes or no. That's always on my mind. I feel like that's been something all along where I've wanted to create, you know, it's our home, but it's also their or our learning environment, but a safe space, safe in lots of different ways. But one way being that they're safe and they feel safe to say no, because they don't know that that's, I mean, I guess I'll just say, I know that's not the case in some homes and in some families. And it's certainly not how, well, it's certainly not how I felt when I was a student in school. I think in my own home and in my own family, for the most part, I felt safe enough to say no to my parents at times. So that's something I just think quite a bit about, is how am I just try to be aware of, am I really creating and offering a space where my kids feel comfortable to say no to whatever it is, whatever it may be that I'm offering or inviting them to do? And you can kind of tell sometimes if they say yes and you're like, and that's when I think you do one of those check-ins, being like, let's have a little chat about this. Or, you know, why are we saying yes? But I love the safe, that's just one piece, I think, of the safe space for all. I think, you know, safe for them to be themselves came to mind. Safe for them to have their bad days. All of those good things that come with being in a space that you feel safe. And my thought is, I certainly want home to feel safe to them. And I want like their relationship with me to feel like a safe environment as well, if that makes sense. But I love this paragraph. This one might be my favorite, and I love the whole thing, but this paragraph is so good.
Well, and it's funny because Haley, I love that line, kindness and calm are a feature of life. One of the reasons I really like that particular line is when we think about, you know, we touched quite a bit in part one about the perceptions that people have of unschooling. And I think people's ideas are that it's a free for all and nobody's respecting anybody and everyone's doing what they want. And it's completely, you know, individual focused or whatever. And so I just like that because it very succinctly talks about how it just, yeah, it doesn't need to be that way. And it often isn't when we're respecting each other. At the same time, I appreciate you bringing that up, Ashley, around sometimes we have a vision that other people's lives are, everyone's being kind all the time, very calm. It's very, and so at the same time, I think it's important that I'm glad that you brought up that piece, because I think that, well, just as you said, you know, you picture our homes all being, you know, everything's going smoothly and kindly and calmly. And I do think that's the other side of the coin with homeschooling or unschooling, maybe, that people assume that it's great. You know, with unschooling, people are getting to do what they want, so there won't be any, you know, and so the truth, of course, lies somewhere in the middle. But it's like both of those things are true. You know, we can have this really kind and calm environment when everybody's feeling heard and respected. And also we're human. And so there's going to sometimes just be moments of chaos. And sometimes that actually comes from us as a parent. It's not even always about the kids being having a rough day. Sometimes, as you said, it's us. And so, yeah. So I'm glad for the line, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Ashley.
Yeah, and the reason I have... I was just going to say the reason I have a blog called Taking a Kinder Path is because I want to take a kinder path more often. Not that I'm always able to take a kinder path. That, you know, that's kind of the point, isn't it? We're all learning. But go on, Sue. Sorry.
No, I interrupted you. Sorry, Hayley. I was thinking about forgiveness. That's an important thing to learn, isn't it? And that's just as valid as kindness and calm all the time, that we learn to be forgiving when we're not always kind. So we all get, hopefully, learn to forgive and we learn to be kinder. But I think that forgiveness is a big aspect of our lives, that we have to learn to forgive each other. It doesn't really matter if we're calm and kind every single moment of the day, because we won't be. But do we forgive each other quickly and get back on track again? And yeah, that's what I was thinking there. But can I just also say that you were talking about safe, I can't find the line now, but feeling safe, Ashley, and what I was thinking, and loyal, those two words are in two different paragraphs, but to me they belong together. They jumped out at me, because sometimes I think that our kids aren't always well behaved. Well, I say they're not well behaved. They don't behave in the manner that we would like them to behave, and put it that way. And there are times I think where we listen or get influenced by other people. Oh, your child hasn't learned to read yet. Your child threw a tantrum. Your child, and we worry about what other people think of our children, and that influences our relationship with our children. And we're not always loyal. And then we talk about our children's, what we call our children's problems, whether they're problems or not. Real problems, but what am I going to do with my child? She's lazy. What am I going to do with my child? She can't read yet, whatever it is. And we're not very loyal to our children. And I think that our families need to be that safe space where our children are accepted. You said, Ashley, our children are accepted for who they are, but also who they are at that moment. And if they make mistakes, or if they're a bit behind on some sort of, I say behind, they're at the right place for them, but behind it on average, then we're reassuring and we're forgiving of mistakes. And our children feel that home is a safe place, because quite often outside the family, it's not safe. And if we make our families an unsafe place, where do our children go? That I think it's so important that they have people who are always loving, always forgiving, always encouraging, and who always are on their side. And that's what we have, that's sort of the atmosphere of our family. That's what I was thinking about that we must be loyal and provide a safe space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sue. So I was ready to go on to the next one, and now you and now you've inspired. I'm thinking about something
else. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. It's good. What I'm thinking about from you saying that, I think you said something about, like, we can be influenced by other people's, you know, either their perspectives of our children, or sometimes it might even be our assumptions about what their perspectives are going to be, and that can kind of influence the way we feel or the way that we go about things with our kids. And I think the first blog post that I wrote that I have never published, I don't even know if I could find it. So I don't know, but I think it was called something like Speaking About Our Children with Grace or something like that. And it was inspired, it wasn't really inspired in a good way. I think I felt I guess I felt motivated to write it because I had been in a group that day, in a group of parents, and people were talking about their kids. And I started to think about how when parents get together, they will often, in very sort of joking ways, but it can take on a tone of sarcasm, they will often say things that can be quite diminishing of their kids. And I mean, sometimes we all joke around a little bit. I don't think we need to be like punitive about this, but I don't think that we think sometimes about how our kids feel when we joke around or we make, I don't know, just comments that really aren't, it seems okay because everybody's laughing. You know, I think it happens a lot with toddlers. It happens a lot with teenagers where there's just sort of like, it feels like there's this kind of free range to make fun of them and to say things. But I don't know, it just kind of hit me that day that it sounded like quite a disparaging conversation. And I think what happened is a couple of the kids came over during the conversation and I was just like aware of it. And prior to that, I had been kind of listening. It hadn't really been impacting me that much. But then when I imagined what it seemed like from the point of view of the kids coming into the conversation, I was like, you know, they might be quite embarrassed that their parents are saying that. And I think that it happens about all sorts of things, but a lot about things like you were talking about, like perceiving somebody as lazy or like those types of things seem like they're kind of free range to make fun of. And I can think back as a kid, I can think of specific examples that I remember adults joking about me or relatives joking about me. And, you know, I wouldn't say it massively affected me, but the fact that I can remember it and I was like 9 or 10, it obviously had some kind of an impact that, you know, that these people were joking about something that, you know, either I had no control over or I didn't even notice about myself. So anyway, I just always appreciate, Sue, how you talk about that. And a lot of the times it's in the context of unconditional love, but I think, that can spill out to all these other areas that we're talking about. So thank you. Are we good to move on to the next one after all of that? Okay. Okay. So I'm going to read these next two together. Supporting each other to follow their dreams, the captains beside them, yet scanning ahead and strewing their path, highlighting horizons they might not have seen. The captain is watchful, checking the fuel and the ship is seaworthy, an eye on supplies and stocks running low, watching the weather and conditions at sea, aware of their bearings should they need to refill, face a storm, or just fancy a change of direction. I'm going to read this. Actually, this next one is pretty connected. Mindful of the model they want for the crew, the captain respects and values them now and knows that one day, sooner or later, they might choose to captain a crew of their own. So, you know, that the line that stands out to me here from the first part here. So it says, highlighting horizons they might not have seen. So again, when we're talking about kind of stereotypes around self-directed learning or unschooling and the idea that kids just completely self-direct, you know, their education without input. So I don't know, that just kind of stood out to me, the idea that we are with our kids in the present, but we're also, we are scanning that horizon, aren't we? Whether it's opportunities, whether it's potential challenges, it really is kind of like keeping a foot in the present, but also kind of being aware of what might come and learning a little bit ahead about what some of those opportunities might be. And so I do think sometimes it can be a little bit of a dance to stay in the present, but then you're also kind of trying to keep these future opportunities available. But yeah, did anything in particular come up for anybody else around those few paragraphs?
I think for me, there is definitely, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And obviously there's lots that we all don't know, but you know, when it comes to our children, they're, you know, we often have lots of things that we feel very enthusiastic and passionate about, that we want to, bits of information that we want to impart to our children. And that doesn't mean necessarily that we've got all the answers or that we've got the right answer. But I think we mentioned this in the first part, perhaps, that the idea of, if we were to withhold all the knowledge and wisdom that we might have built up in our lives, then that would seem neglectful, really, you know, just to let our children go off and do whatever they want without us, you know, giving them information that might help them. And I do think, yeah, that whole idea of, you don't know what you don't know, there might be, you know, they may be interested in something, and we, you know, we do have knowledge that can help them on their way to find out more, or to get more joy from something. And that's really, you know, that's an important part of our role, isn't it, to help our children enjoy their life.
I think this,
and if they trust you, Hayley, they're going to listen. Like, I think that if we have those connections and we have the trust, and that they know that you're not, they have permission maybe to listen and reject your suggestions or whatever, then we can help our children more, can't we, if we have that respect and those connections there.
Yeah, and it's again what we were talking about last time, I suppose, about invitations rather than commands. You know, we can offer options to our children, and they don't necessarily, hopefully, what we want, I guess, is that they don't feel like we're trying to persuade them to go in one direction or another, that, you know, as that we've got our own agenda and we're trying to force them into some direction or another. It's, you know, hopefully what we're trying to do is, yeah, provide information so that they've got the knowledge that they need to think through options and possible consequences and all those kinds of things. That's, you know, that's really important, isn't it? And they are, you know, and the more we do that for them, the more they do that for us as well. Definitely, I'm sure that's been a big feature of all of our experience as well.
Yeah, I think that this part, for me, I found it helpful. Like, I know there's been at least one conversation I had with another parent, and I sent them the post afterwards, and thinking about this part, because to me, it kind of, in a way, like, answered what it's like to be an unschooling parent, like what you do. Like, it's got the strewing part in there and like the looking ahead for potential opportunities and challenges and stuff. So it kind of came to mind as like, you have this role of being like an attentive, resourceful guide. So everything you just said around like sharing the information that we already have, or that we can look ahead and find for the kids and just pass it along. I think just paying attention, and then providing. And it kind of, for me, I think about, I know I've had comments, not so much recently, but maybe a year ago or so, a few people close to around the same time said, your kids are getting older, you must feel like you're having more time on your hands. And I thought about that, and I was like, well, wait a second, should I? Because I don't think that I do. If anything, I feel, you know, kind of just as busy or maybe even busier, because when they were younger, like when they were really small, they did all the playing. So, you know, maybe I would be bringing in new toys or puzzles or books. So that took time, but the older they get, I feel like there's that much more for me to be strewing or thinking about ahead, like we're going out into the world more. As they get older, there seems to be more opportunities. So I feel like I have to really pay attention and spend, like what you were saying, I think, Erin, like balancing it, right? Like being in the moment with them, doing the things with them during the day, but also taking time, kind of just in my own head, in those, you know, quiet moments that we find, to think about this type of stuff. So yeah, like being an attentive, resourceful guide, that's kind of what came to mind when I read this part.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I've been thinking about that lately. I wrote a I don't think it's on my blog. I think it's just on Instagram, but I hadn't really connected it until some of those things you just said there, Ashley, but this idea about highlighting horizons they might not have seen. And I find now that my kids are young adults, I'm trying to figure out what my role is with that. Like, it's fine, but it's a new stage where you're figuring out how much, 'cause I think there was a part of me that kind of really stepped back from offering too much input because, well, they're adults. I don't want to be in their face with ideas, or I don't want it to come off as me thinking that, you know, that I don't think that particular things are doing that they should be making changes, or that there's any, you know, anything else to think about around that. But then I started thinking, you know, the last few months especially, I would see things come up that I would think, oh, this would be really interesting for so-and-so to know about, or maybe they would enjoy this, or I think I was still sharing ideas that were purely like enjoyment oriented, but I think it was this idea of highlighting horizons they might not have seen. I think I'm still trying to figure that out. What, you know, are there, you know, what are the pieces that might be useful for me to share just simply because I've been on the earth longer? And there might be some practical things to talk about. And then sometimes I do that and I realize that actually my way of thinking is quite outdated and they've already, right? Like the world is really different now. So a lot of the things that I thought I would share with my kids don't even necessarily make sense. I mean, everything from job application, like everything's different now with, you know, just different ways of doing things. So it's kind of like, it may not be the specifics to share, but just the, I don't even know what it is. I mean, it's encouragement, but I think I'm still finding my feet around that. You know, what's my role now that they're this age, as far as these horizons that they might not be to yet. Can we just, I feel like we're doing a lot of really good talking about like the relationship end of unschooling. And I'm curious whether, any of you have thoughts about the idea of highlighting horizons they might not have seen when it comes to sort of the more, what we would see as a kind of conventional academic subjects, because I do hear that as something that people will say a lot of is that, well, my kids wouldn't see the importance in learning to read, or they wouldn't see the importance in learning XYZ or learning a musical instrument, or you could fill in the blank with lots of different things, but just that more kind of learning end of things. I'm kind of putting people on the spot, but does anybody have a thought when it comes to kind of the academic end of unschooling, this idea of them not knowing what they don't know? Because that's something I hear a lot. And what I notice is that as kids need, as it becomes a need, they know that and they become quite internally motivated. But I feel like that's also kind of like the standard blanket answer. So, right? Like, I think people get tired of hearing that sometimes, but I do find that it just takes, I think it takes two things. I think it takes more patience than people want to, longer than people want to wait. And I also think, it's really hard for us to set our own assumptions about what's important aside.
Yeah, I think you're right, Erin. And I'm going to share my example anyway, because it's just a really short one and it's recent, but it's kind of similar to what you've said. And it's different, I think, for me, because my two are only 11 and 8. So we'll encounter this more and more as they get older. But just this past, I don't know, this past week, I think it was my youngest, which is funny. So he's 8, and it was a conversation, or he brought it up with his dad, somehow along the lines of mentioning that he thinks he might want to be a babysitter one day. And they had a little chat about, like, my husband, I think it was his first, or no, it wasn't his first job because he had a paper route. but one of his first jobs was babysitting his younger cousins. So they were having a little chat about that. And my 8-year-old really likes younger kids. So I think he's kind of thinking when he's a bit older that maybe that's something he would like to do, is be a babysitter. And then that kind of led in, and this was my husband telling me afterwards about the conversation they had. I wasn't there for it. But my husband kind of mentioned and asked me, you know, where's he at with his reading and his writing? And I think my youngest kind of had a few questions, like, well, how would I become a babysitter? And my husband mentioned the babysitting course. I don't know if they have babysitting courses everywhere, but I think they're pretty common here, where you don't have to take the babysitting course to babysit, of course. But I don't know. I remember taking it, and I remember actually teaching it too. And so my husband was thinking, oh, well, if he's going to go to the babysitting course, there would be reading involved, and there would probably be some writing involved. And it's kind of like a classroom sweat setting. So it just got him thinking. And so they just chatted about it a little bit, but it tends to come up in those situations where lots of times for us with both kids, it's kind of job related. But like what you were saying, Erin, like it's on a need to know basis, I guess. Like it's to meet a goal that they have. It's something else that they maybe want to do. Not always. Like my youngest has talked specifically about wanting to strengthen his reading skills, because I mean, it was maybe just a few months ago where he would say things like, am I going to be a really strong reader one day? Will I be able to read a book like you're reading one day? And so that does happen too, more so with him than my older one. But I think a lot of times it is, it's to meet a greater goal or a greater need or an interest that they have, even though I think that's really important what you said, and helpful to remember that we often have to be quite patient when that's the way it goes. But so anyway, we went to the library and we got out a bunch of, not a bunch, but a few books on jobs and careers and what does it mean to become a veterinarian, and an engineer was one. And you start talking about, and then the questions come up. I'm rambling, but I'll wrap this up. The questions come up about, because what did he ask? Do you have to go to school if you want to go to like veterinarian school or something like that? And, you know, you start talking about all the different options, and it's just interesting when they're only 11 and 8 and they definitely have time. And that's not the first time these conversations have happened. So anyway, I'll stop.
No, it's good. And it makes me think too, like my, I don't know how I worded it, but that idea about, you know, not knowing what they don't know, and learning to read and those sorts of things. But even the way I phrase that makes it sound very much like learning to read is like this endeavor that they're going to decide to start to learn to read, where so often it's happening incrementally, or it's happening in bits and pieces, or as you said, it happens because there's something really specific that they're wanting to do, or a goal they're going to meet. And for some people, it learning to read is challenging. So it might be something that they might actually say, you know, I have this goal, or I want to either learn to read or strengthen my skills. But it's just interesting to even think about that as like a separate thing to learn versus something that maybe just happens a little bit more, organically. But we do have babysitter courses around here too. And it's funny because I did a lot of babysitting as a kid and as a teen, but I never took a course. I'm not sure exactly what's, you know, incorporated in it, but it's one of those things where, again, some kids might like the idea of taking the certification, right? And it might help them feel confident. And for other kids, it would just feel unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Totally dependent. So,
And I think there are so many occasions in life where these conversations come up. Other people will be talking about things, and then, our children will ask us, oh, what is it that they were talking about? And maybe it's a maths concept, or it's a piece of literature, or it's a, I don't know, it's a geographical feature that just comes up in conversation, or it's on the television or something like that. And those, we're often having conversations about those kinds of things. And it is, and when we think about, I suppose, like you say about qualifications and things, those you know, it is part of our role to be considering what the options might be. And it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, you have to sit them down and have some kind of formal conversation. You know, what are you going to do with your life, and what should we do? You know, we have to have this A, B, C, D plan. I mean, maybe that works for some people, but that's not, it's not usually how it happens in life. I think it's much more organic. And you know, my children have asked in the past about, well, what do they do in maths at school, or what do they do at school? It's probably the first thing that comes out. And then they might, you know, and we've definitely had, I mean, PE was the thing that I remember. I mean, I don't know if PE translates across the water, but I'm, you know, when I was at school, PE was physical education. And I remember one of my children being asked, what do you do in PE? And they just looked at me and were like, I don't know what PE is. And then I said, well, they're saying, you know, what kind of exercise do you do, and what sports do you play, and that kind of, and then they were like, oh, right. Oh, okay. Well, I ride my bike and I play football, and, you know, whatever it was that they were into at the time. But those things just come up over, I mean, I guess that's a very unsatisfactory answer, but I feel like there are opportunities, life brings in those opportunities for us to talk about all those things. And often we can feel very, I think you said, Erin, patience. Yeah, we can feel very concerned sometimes that we need to tell our children everything all at once, which, you know, we couldn't anyway, even if we did have all the answers. It's a more organic process.
So I think what you're saying there, Haley, which makes a lot of sense to me, is not so much that we need to be thinking, okay, I'm going to look out onto the horizon. What do I need to, even if I'm not quite going to present it to my kids yet, what do I need to know? It's like, just as our kids learn organically, as parents, we learn organically as well. So it's kind of like, things come up, opportunities come up. We think, oh, that would be something to keep in mind. We notice, you know, growth in our child or change in our child. And so we kind of look outside of our bubble a little bit to think of, you know, if we wanted to bring something in or we wanted a resource, what are those? Versus I think when I'm thinking about some of this other stuff, like talking about my kids as young adults, sometimes I think I'm actually thinking, okay, what do I need to be doing here? What horizons do they not know about that I need to let them know? Like, it's a sense of like, me needing to find out what those things are. And I love the way you explained it, because it's really just, we're trusting our children, and also we trust ourselves as people to learn naturally in our role as well. Yeah.
And I think Sue was mentioning earlier about kind of saying to her children about some cool Shakespeare play that's on. I mean, it's totally fine. You know, this idea that we can't tell our children anything, we again, that thing about being child-led, it's, you know, it's so lovely to be able to say, oh, there's this really cool thing that I think you'd be interested in, whether that's a Shakespeare play or whether that's, I don't know, some cool art technique, or it could be, you know, anything that we think our children might be interested in. And, you know, that's a cool thing, isn't it, to be able to share that and say, I think you might like this, you might be interested in it. And they may not.
I was thinking about that, supporting each other to follow their dreams. I was thinking about that word there, and how sometimes we get so excited when we see our kids passionate about something that could be a career, and we think we've done it, we've strewed enough, and our kids have found their passion and they're going to pursue it to a level that will they'll be able to support themselves on this passion. And we get so super excited and start strewing all sorts of information and bombarding them with, you could do this, you could do that. And then either the passion just fizzles up and we get disappointed and we think, oh, we've got to go through all that again because this wasn't the one. And or we actually are attached to some dream that we had for our children. My daughter Imogen, she had a couple of dreams where she thought, first of all, that she might do medicine because she was the St. John ambulance officer. And she was pretty good at that. And so she thought, well, what do I have to do, Mum, to do medicine? And we researched together and found out she could do some university units that would give her a score to get into a face-to-face university. She could do the university units at home and then put the results of those together to apply to an on-campus course. So she did all that, but she couldn't quite give away her music or her writing. Like one of those people with lots of passions. So she fulfilled all the requirements that she had to do to get, she did advanced maths. She did all the requirements to get into university and then decided she wouldn't do that. She would either follow music or writing. And she chose the writing, though she kept on with her music for a while. But part of me, sometimes I think about those music video days and I think about the opportunities that I said we found out about where you could go study with this teacher, this voice teacher. You could go to the city and have lessons with this particular teacher. You could do this, you could do that. And she didn't do it. She decided she would write. And sometimes I walk around the house and the piano hasn't, the lid hasn't been lifted for ages. There's dust all over the piano. And I think, oh, I just yearn to have music in the house again. And isn't it a sad that she chose to write instead of play music? And I think, well, I'm not really sad she chose to write because I write and we share that. But it is hard to let go of our own dreams and the joy and the delight that we would have had if they had chosen a different dream. And sometimes I do say to her, have you thought about making some more music videos? As the times have moved on, you could green screen. We don't all have to go out and find a location every time these days. We could try out that gimbal that Sophie bought and hardly used before we stopped making music videos. And you could do this, you could do that. And she takes it all in. But I know it's not the right time. And I think, well, she knows what she could do, and maybe it will be the right time at another time. And I think that's the thing about dreams. They're not always for a lifetime. They come and go, and you can go back to something. And even if you haven't got the qualifications to get into a university course at this particular moment, it doesn't mean you can't get them. And you can't go into university at a later stage. And I just see so many parents thinking, well, it will be better if my child learns this, that, and the other, just in case they want to follow that this particular pathway. Is it their dream or is it the parents' dream? And you were talking about how we learn from a need. The motivation is our needs. And if a child doesn't have that motivation at the time, they're not going to do a very good job of learning that maths or learning this or that if they don't see a need for it exactly at the time. And that thing about following their dreams, sometimes I think as parents, we can envisage the dream better than our children. We go 10 steps ahead of them. And they need to get there slowly by themselves. So we're thinking, oh, look, they're going to be a famous musician. So they're going to need to do this, this, and this, and this. And if a child really wants to do it, they'll go step by step and we'll give them the information at the particular time that we don't have to rush ahead too far. I haven't said that quite right. But I think that we can get too wrapped up in our kids' dreams, whether it's from the joy and the delight that we would receive if they did that, whether it involves us in some way, or whether it is, I've written a post called Basking in the Reflected Glory. And I think it is good when our kids have dreams, but in multiple ways. And one of those ways is you can say to other people, look at what my child's doing. We're unschoolers and, well, we're making these music videos and she's going to be a musician, you know. And then when it falls flat and they don't want to do it, and you think, the same as what we were talking about, I think, last episode, sometimes our unschooling dreams or our dreams as parents they disappear. It's not their dream, it was our dream. And now I can't say, look, I've got this daughter who makes these music videos. It was valuable to me in a particular way. And to be, what's the word? Not distracted, detached. We have to be detached, but at the same time, supportive.
Yeah, it's that, I think this is where we talk so much about how much of it is our own work to do, because we are leaning in. Sometimes we lean into things that don't even make sense to us because we trust their, you know, they might have an interest in something that's quite far from what we have an interest in, but we lean in. So we encourage and we, maybe help facilitate parts of it, or maybe we make purchases and, you know, change our time around to accommodate it and everything else. So we really lean in. And then at the same time, we have to let go when that changes. And I think I've used kind of examples before where there would be times where something would be important, maybe a particular activity. And so I would, you know, you try to make that work. So you shift your schedule, you might shift somebody else's schedule in the family, and you kind of really kind of go all in making this work. And then they change their interest. And you're kind of like, you know, but I just got here. I worked to get here. And now I see why you're passionate about this. And then they change course. So it really is this very delicate balance of validating and respecting. But it's really that line of, you know, where we end and our child begins, that we always have to be working with. But that's a lot easier said than done. And so I just thinking about, I don't know what it is you said that made me think of this, but I know the Exploring Unschooling podcast, you know, Pamela Rickia a few years ago did an episode, and I can't remember the name of it, but the idea was that you can live an ordinary life. I think people feel comforted by, there's almost a bit of a compensation that if unschooling kids aren't going to necessarily follow the prescribed conventional path, that it's sort of balanced off by the fact that they might do something really exciting. You know, they might travel the world doing whatever, or they might really dive into a career in something early. So I can't remember the name of the episode, but I'm going to see if I can find it, because it's just the idea that like an ordinary life is fine. And our lives change, like, you know, just you talking about all the different interests that and strengths that Imogen had, like, we're very diverse, aren't we? So it's almost impossible to do everything at the same time. And different parts of ourselves can come out in different ways. But I think you're right. I think as a parent, we have all these thoughts, and it's almost a bit overwhelming at times, because we can see, quote, the potential in different areas, and we sort of want to see that play out. But I think so much of what we're talking about comes back to trust. Trust that the child knows when their timing is. Trust that life will offer opportunities.
I was also thinking about how sad it is when kids follow parents' dreams. So they do something to keep us happy, and either they end up, and what a feeling of, what a burden that would be on the parent later on if they knew that my child didn't do what they really wanted to do that would make them happy because they wanted to keep me happy. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't support our kids in their choices, what are we saying? Either they go and do it anyway and risk up thinking, well, I'm going to do this, follow my dream, but it's going to make my parents unhappy, and that's what I'm going to choose to do. So they feel guilty, or I'm going to do what my parents think is best, and I'm going to be unhappy. And that makes us feel guilty when we realize, and how much better it is just to support, support our kids in their dreams. And as you just said, to trust that they know what they want to do and they'll do it. And also how dreams do change over time. And that, yeah, with that diversity of interests, it's really quite amazing what give ourselves permission to let go of something so you can take on something else. And we can't always do everything all at once, but we have choices. A lot of the time we have choices, don't we?
Yeah, and I think what you said as well, Sue, about remembering that you don't have to do things at a certain age. You can, you know, just because you don't go to university at 18 doesn't mean you'll never go to university. You could go to university when you're 50, and you might never go to university, and that would be fine too. But there's, you know, as adults, we talked about this in a different episode, haven't we, about how as adults people change careers, you know, lots, and it is kind of not, you know, we live in a different world to when perhaps somebody did get a career at 16 and stayed doing that forever, if they ever did, I don't know. But, you know, I think that's important to remember as well, that things are always changing, and that those opportunities don't necessarily go away. They can come round again. But there is so much of that trust and respecting their ideas and the fact that, you know, sometimes I know I've had instances before where maybe I've been worrying about something that I think my children ought to know or ought to do or something like that. And I'll restrain myself. I'll sit on it and think, I'm going to work really hard not to mention it to them, not to make them feel bad about it, or not to, you know. And then sometimes they'll just come to me and say, oh, I've realized that I need a bit of help with this, whatever it is. And you think, you know, you begin so much, you get accumulate so many examples, I think, along the way with the experience, that you begin to realize that you can, yeah, that trust just grows, doesn't it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The longer this, you know, the longer we go on living like this, the more we begin to realize that our children are so, you know, so much more capable and so much more knowing and so much more of so many things than perhaps, you know, other, I don't know, sometimes the perception is of children that we kind of might be hearing about in other circles. And that's just, that begins to not be our experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just keep thinking about, oh, sorry, go ahead, Sue.
No. I'm thinking we're talking about it gone down to just fancy a change of direction we've covered that a little bit by talking just naturally from starting up at that beginning of that paragraph. Carry on, Haley. Ashley, I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, not at all. I was just going to say, as I was listening to this idea of trusting, and it can be easier said than done to trust our children, but I was just thinking, like, what a gift it is to give our children that, because I think that's when, as a child or, you know, as a young person, that allows you to start to trust yourself, right? If you always have a parent, right? A caregiver, I don't know, guiding you too strongly, helping you too much to make all the decisions, all the choices, kind of the whole not letting you make mistakes. You feel like, I think some people anyway, can feel like, how I can't do this on my own. I've always had mom here, or I've always had grandma here, or whoever. And I think it's very important to stay present, like we were talking about, like you were saying, Haley, like your kids will come to you, right? So like you're still there, and they can trust that you're there, but you're there when they're ready to come to you. So it allows young people, I think, to learn to trust themselves, because I think that that takes time, like that develops over years. So it gives them that space to not only trust that they can make their own choices, and that sometimes they're going to make the right choice, and sometimes maybe they're going to make the choice they look back on and think, I wish I had chosen something differently, but life goes on and that's okay, and I survived. but also allows them the time and space to get to know themselves too. Because if you constantly have these messages of this is what you should be doing, especially like this is what you should do next. And then after you do that, you should do this, right? Like the whole high school, college and university, first job, family, whatever it is, whatever the story is, you just start to follow a path almost without pausing and thinking, well, who am I and what do I really want? I was just thinking how it is a gift that we can give by just kind of quieting, being a little bit more quiet and still being a supportive presence, but letting them kind of decide, I guess, when to come to us and when to just kind of try to figure things out on their own. So probably a lot easier said than done, but I think really valuable in the long run.
Really glad that you actually brought that piece up, Ashley, because I hadn't been thinking about that, but I think that's so true. And I know that that was kind of an Achilles heel for me, was that wanting to, I've been thinking about this from time to time, and I wonder if other people might be able to relate, like people who are listening might be able to relate to this. I think sometimes it's not that we don't trust our child's process, it's that we don't trust the system of life. So it's not so much that we think there's anything wrong with our child, but we don't necessarily trust that the way that they do things or the pace that they're moving at is going to work for life, if that makes any sense. And because I do hear people say that, like they see their kids are learning, they see their kids are curious, they see that their kids move along in interesting ways, right? And they actually really like that each of their kids is unique and all these kinds of things, but it's more like, but will that work with the system? It's not so much that they don't think their kids are natural learners. It's like, will it, it's really out of love for the child that they want to make sure things work out. And so I do think that that might be something that other people can relate to, but that definitely, one of my kids as an adult has said that to me, that they felt that for me in certain areas. And they were right. There were certain things that I didn't really trust, that it's not that I thought there was anything wrong with them. I didn't trust that there wouldn't be a mismatch between the way that they were going about things and the way that society works, right? So I think, that's hard to hear, because I think like our intentions are so good and we genuinely want the best for people. But I think too, there, when we're living in this kind of relationship with people, there are other, how can I put it? There's chances to keep working through that relationship. Because I think at the heart of this, that's what we're talking about, is our relationship with our kids and their relationship to the, with themselves and those, all those pieces. So I guess just to say that I'm finding that if we're open to the fact that, you know, raising children is not a one and done. There's still, you know, they might get past the age of 18, they might get past the age of 20, and we're still learning and they're still learning. And so there's space to kind of keep working on those pieces. So anyway, I'm just kind of glad you brought that up, because it wouldn't have entered my mind to say that, but I'm not even sure how much sense that made, but I don't think it's that people don't believe that kids can learn. I think it's that they're scared of the world, right? Like it's different.
You go.
I was just going to say, if we've had the experience of feeling judged as well, we want to protect our children from that. And we know what certain expectations might be of other people. And so like you were saying, Erin, about that feeling protective, we want to try and, yeah, sometimes we feel that we want to head off the judgment that they might encounter, I think. And that's very hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I think for some kids, they might actually find that this is another one of those things where you're always working with nuances, because some kids might actually appreciate that, and other kids might feel like they were cut off. You know, it's, you're always kind of trying to figure out, I think, what the, yeah. Anyway, Sue, did you?
Oh, I just think saying that, I was going to tell the story of one of my sons. He was working in the kitchen of a restaurant, and the chef, a typical chef, yelled, was really rude, swore at him, wasn't respectful at all. And because he'd grown up in an environment where he was always treated with kindness and respect, he objected. And he talked back and said, you know, it's not right that you speak to me this way. Got himself into a bit of trouble there because the chef didn't appreciate being corrected. And my son was very upset about all this, but I think it's one of those situations where our kids go from a family situation out into the world and then have to conform to the circumstances out in the world. They can't control the situations. We can do something about it at home, but if he wanted to work in that restaurant, he would have to modify his own response to that chef and just put up with it. And so we sat down and had a chat about how he was feeling, what he could do, what was counterproductive. And we decided that he decided that he couldn't actually change the chef. The chef wasn't going to change. So his choices were just to take it or to get another job. And I just sort of thought about how could I have prepared him for that situation? I couldn't have, because I didn't know he was going to work in a restaurant. I didn't know. And you don't want to, I guess, spoil the innocence of our kids as well by saying, well, the world is this horrible place out there and you're going to have to learn to deal with it. So we're not going to be respectful at home, because look, it's like people saying it's good to tease your kids because they're going to get teased outside, and toughen them up. And so you toughen your kids up so they'll deal with a tough world. But I think that I'd rather have my son the way he is, which is very sensitive and respectful, and just talk through these issues as they come along. And he trusts me, and we sat down and had a chat about it and realized that, yeah, the world's not home. And he did have choices. He didn't have to work there. But if he wanted to work there, he was going to have to let it roll off him and not take it so personally. So that was just a little story about conforming with the world. Maybe not one that, I don't know if it illustrated some of what we were talking about, but it's one that came up as I was listening to you, Erin.
But Sue, isn't that like, so I also worked in a restaurant briefly as a young person, and also had people speaking terribly to me and to each other. And so I guess when people are making that suggestion that you're saying, you know, teasing children, or, you know, I've kind of heard it said about bullying and stuff too. It's part of life. Kids need to get used to it. So having gone to school all those years, it still really, really bothered me that somebody was speaking to me that way, that other people were speaking to each other that way. It bothered me so much that I quit. So going to school didn't stop me from being very sensitized and very upset. I can remember not being able to relax enough to sleep because I knew I had like a 7 a.m. shift the next morning. So going to school didn't help me figure out how to manage that. And the difference is that you and your son had that very practiced and natural way of talking things through. Like, this was normal to him to say, you know what, this doesn't feel right to me. You were able to talk it through. And, you know, potentially maybe people do choose, if the benefits of staying are higher than the benefits of leaving, maybe people do choose to stay for a while and just kind of say, you know, I'm making an active choice to do this because I've thought it through. And that feels different than just, I'm not saying I shouldn't have quit. I I think I should have quit. But it was on a whim that I just thought, I can't take this anymore. And I think that how different would that be to sit and have a really just a thought out conversation about it and to feel like you had some choice. I feel like that's more empowering.
And also this safe space, going back to the safe space, he could come back to the safe space of home, to people who understood, to discuss these things and be honest about how he was feeling. And that's why another reason why we need to make families safe space, so that he could go back out there and cope with that. Because imagine if our families were that way as well, then you wouldn't have anyone to tend to you. It would just be normal life. But he could come home to people that loved and respected him, build up his reserves again, get stronger, go back out into the world. And I think that is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, our next paragraph we've kind of talked about. So I'll just read it so that we have the words, but I think we've really kind of covered it in our conversation. Chances are offered with willing support to learn more of the ship and the lands they explore. Without pressure or time scales, few demands on the crew. Yet naturally time passes and each of the crew assume more of a role in sailing the ship and directing their course. So I think, you know, I think we've kind of, that's a lot of what we've been talking about, is there not being these pressures or time scales, or the fact that we don't need to place arbitrary demands on our kids for them to kind of come to their natural process of wanting to do things and wanting to explore more. And I mean, even Ashley, the fact that your 8-year-old is naturally thinking about careers, and you know, those things just happen on their own and they ebb and flow a little bit. So I don't know. I will pause though, if anybody had anything they really wanted to add to that.
Well, it just made me think, as you were talking about that safe space again, and all the things we've just been talking about, reminded me of a bit in the Gabor Maté and Gordon Newfield book, the Hold On To Your Kids, the bit where they talk about independent nature will take care of independence. This is my words, but I think what they were getting at was this whole idea that our job is to provide that safe space, that soft landing, if you like, for our kids to have, and for us to build the bonds and be the support for them, and that nature will take care of independence. We don't need to push independence. If they've got those deep roots of attachment and confidence in themselves that we're building by giving them that unconditional love and supporting them to talk through things and you know, be able to say no so that they can say yes, and all those different bits, then that we don't have to force independence on them. We don't have to push them to independence. That naturally, you know, as humans, we move towards independence. And that doesn't mean that we, you know, we can still be very deeply connected to our families, even when we're independent. You know, we're still very interconnected, yeah. But we can... Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe our independence, maybe those connections allow us to be independent. Mm-hmm. That
yeah.
we have that foundation that allows us to go out there and be independent. We have confidence. That we need the connections to be independent. It's not one or the other. It's one before the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas there's often a view of some people can see it the other way and think that you know, they might feel that this is kind of mollycoddling our children, and that is going to create the opposite. Whereas in actual fact, it's not. It's building those strong relationships enables them mm-hmm. to move forward, doesn't it? Like you're saying, rather than holding them back. Yeah. Yeah.
And Sue, I agree entirely. And it's funny, I was actually going to say it the opposite way as well. So I think they each feed into each other. I was going to say that when a family is made up of individuals that feel solid in themselves, that they are then better able to have those connected relationships. So I think it's both. It's the connected relationships that feed into having that sense of ourselves and feeling good in our own skin. And then when we have that sense of ourselves, we are better able to give, you know, when it's that analogy about the bucket, you know, when our buckets are full, we can pour back out to other people. So it's like a circle kind of. So I think this is kind of our last three paragraphs are all very related. So I'll read them, and I think this might sort of be our final point to discuss. Sometimes it's rough on them seas that we love. There's sadness and tears, anger, frustration, and fears. None of them perfect, and all make mistakes. But rather than declaring disaster has hit, pooling their knowledge and sharing their wisdom, the captain and crew keep their faith in each other. Willing to say when they're sorry and admit they've messed up, knowing deep down that adversity enriches the trip. Feeling closer again, offering a hand and asking for help are encouraged, embraced, and part of the deal. The weather, the landscape, and the sailors will change, but they're in it together and know that with time and with effort, attention, and care, they'll each find their own way and get where they want. So onward they sail in the ups and the downs, peaceful and joyful and enjoying the ride. So there's lots of good stuff there, but we're back to this theme of togetherness and togetherness in the face of imperfection. Sue, you had said earlier in the conversation, you talked about asking for forgiveness. I'm just looking at this part, willing to say when they're sorry and admit they've messed up. And I guess I alluded to that too in discussions with one of my kids about whether they felt trusted or not. So I think we really keep circling back to this relationship piece as usual, don't we?
Yeah. That's what I think, that we start off thinking about unschooling as education. Or some people, I'm an unschooler only in education. I'm not an unschooler for parenting. I don't want to know about radical unschooling. And if, the more the years go by, I think you can't have one without the other. That you can't do unschooling just education without all those other connections, trust, respect, love coming into it. How can you do it? Otherwise, you're saying, well, the child can just has choices. But with what we've been talking about today, as you said, Erin, we keep coming back to connections. And connections is really, if you're going to put it in one or the other, education or parenting, it goes in the parenting bucket. It's I only trust you with your education. I don't trust you with deciding what you're going to eat or when you're going to sleep. I mean, it doesn't make much sense, does it? And in some ways, it would be, if I trust you with your education, that's a bigger deal in some people's eyes than trusting whether you're going to go to bed at a particular hour.
Yeah, I think it's so much about who people are, Sue, because I would say that even for myself, the things that people get the most fired up about around, I guess, if they're defining things as radical unschooling. So when we're talking about things like, food and sleeping and screens and that sort of thing, chores, all those things that kind of go in that radical unschooling bucket, those things for me are not, and I recognize that for other people, they might be more challenging to think about, but those things have never been particularly challenging for me. There might be certain times where I think, maybe I'm noticing something with food or with eating and I want to offer a bit of information, or I think, you know, we're doing everything really quickly. It might be nice to kind of slow down and offer more options. I don't mean that I don't think about it, But the idea of sort of like mistrusting my kids around it. So like bedtime for me, we've never really had bedtimes, but for me, it's not really about, if I felt frustrated, it was usually because I was having, my kid just wanted to stay up later than I did. It wasn't like a moral, it wasn't like a safety concern, I guess is what I'm getting at. Whereas I think the academic stuff, again, not super hard for me, but that's what I've thought about more probably than the radical end of things. So it's interesting how, I guess just the direction that people come into things, but I agree with you. Once we start just kind of living and learning with our kids, it all feels similar. So if we're a little bit concerned that there's an area that they're not maybe learning something, I'm not sure that we deal with that any differently than if we notice they might not be getting enough sleep. We kind of think it through. We work on our trust. We get to a point where it's not all divvied up, don't we? Or categorized, maybe is a better word. Yeah. Does anybody else have anything else on that one, or? No. Okay. I feel like this has been good. And it's kind of interesting how by the time we got to the end, we'd sort of covered it. Like, yeah, through the other ones anyway.
Just shows that we keep jumping ahead and coming back. But that's what unschooling's all about, isn't it? It's life, and we've got all these connections, not just with each other, but with information. And you can't talk about one aspect of unschooling without bringing in something else. It's just the way it is, and that's what I find so fascinating. That unlike if you were talking about a method of homeschooling like Charlotte Mason, we would just say, let's talk about nature study, and we wouldn't actually move from nature study. We could do that without moving onto some other aspect because they're more separate. This is a subject. How are we going to teach nature study? How are we going to teach writing? I know that you can find those connections anyway. Like, we're going to write about our nature study in our nature study books, and so we've connected the two. But it's not the same as unschooling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It all kind of weaves together, doesn't it? And I think once our kids get past school age, nobody thinks that way anyway. Like, we don't, you know, you don't think about your reading level at a certain age. And, you know, if you want to strengthen your skills in an area, you don't think about what category it fits into. You just go about your business kind of trying to figure out how to do that. So yeah, I like that way of thinking of it, Sue. We don't have to kind of divide it all up. We're just talking about, I think you said, really it's about being a parent and being a human, really, right? So.
Well, Erin, I think that's why I like how you often refer to unschooling as whole life learning. Mm-hmm. The further I get along in that, I just keep coming back to that and thinking that makes so much sense, because it's not just about, I don't know, school learning. It's life. It's all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when we're in kind of like the home education realm, it's hard to just use that term because it could mean anything. But at the end of the day, that really is, yeah, that really what it is. So
you said about being a human, Erin, and I think it's being a human, interacting with other humans, isn't it? And that's the kind of principles of unschooling, the things like trust and respect and kindness and curiosity. All those things are so powerful for our personal relationships, but they're so powerful, I think, for, I don't know, creating a more peaceful world as well, really. I think if, you know, the more we're able to incorporate these principles into our lives, I feel like the more peaceful we become as people and the more potential there is for peace in the world, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're always often intentional about that, Haley, on your blog, some of the names of the blog posts and even your blog itself, right? I think it's Taking a Kinder Path. Isn't the world mentioned there for ourselves, our children in the world, or something? Or maybe maybe that's a specific post, but that's exactly
I think that's a tagline. Exactly.
Okay, well,
I'm just thinking, Erin, about the ship, and we're still on our ship here as we finish, but how a lot of people wouldn't want to get on the ship and set sail with their families or the people around them, because I've heard so many people say, oh, I wouldn't want to homeschool because I wouldn't want to spend so much time with my children. We need our own space. We need to get out of each other's hair. I couldn't have them at home every day. And even at school, my husband says that when they're getting to the end of the term, the parents say, instead of saying, oh, we're going to have kids home, they say, oh, what are we going to do with the kids during the holidays? And it's always, thank goodness the holidays are over, because the kids can go back to school. And so I was thinking, as we're coming to the end here, that when we get on that ship with our families, and we work on things like love and respect and forgiveness and discover who each of those people are on that ship with us, we feel very blessed that we're part of this family and there's nowhere else we'd like to be, that we're learning from each other. And I would think, I'm so glad that I'm setting sail here with my family and we're going to go off on this big adventure together. And I wouldn't want to get off and say, oh, look, I need a break from them. You have problems along the way, of course. You're going to have a bad day when kindness doesn't work and somebody's going to get on that raft and paddle off a little way by themselves and cool down, and mum's going to go and hide in one of the cabins for a little while. But you're going to get back together at dinner time and say, you know, I'm really glad we're here on this trip together. And I think there's so much to be thankful for, because we discovered unschooling and we're brave enough to step onto the unschooling ship and set sail. And we didn't know it all when we started and we still don't know it all, but we learn so much while we're traveling together about each other, but not just about each other, but ourselves as well. And then we can go out there into the world. And as you were saying there, earlier, was it you, Haley, was saying that, well, you're all saying that what we take, we kindness and that, we go out into the world with it. And yeah, it affects our relationships with the world as well. But we, yeah, that ship there. I feel sad we've got to that our voyage has come to an end, Erin, that, Haley's article has come to an end. But unschooling goes on, and so does your podcast. It's only this particular conversation that I've enjoyed so much. So I'm just really thankful that you asked me to be part of it.
We're so glad that you're here discussing it with us, Sue. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been good, and now we can definitively say it's a two-part. It's a two-part, not a three. So we did it. Thank you so much, Sue, and good to see you, Ashley and Haley, and until next time.
Thank you, Erin.
Okay.
Bye, Haley. Ashley.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.